G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Adam, good morning to you.
Good morning, Harf. Haven't had much sleep, but that's okay. That's okay because...
Your choice.
It's my choice. But I thought Lucas Herbert might have pulled off the remarkable last night. He kind of did in a lot of ways. He got himself... in the lead of the Scottish Open, unfortunately ended up falling two shots short, but still a remarkable performance again from the boy from Bendigo. So he ended up finishing in a tie for fourth, but he got it to five under through his first nine holes, and he came from the clouds to put himself into contention. So that was going on overnight, and then just as we speak, Cameron Davis, the young Australian golfer, former Australian Open winner, he has just teed off, and he is equal leader on the PGA Tour, so we'll be following that throughout the course of the morning as well. So some crazy things have happened over the weekend in regards to sporting results to discuss. Yeah,
and stand by with your craziness.
All over the world.
Stand by with your craziness. There is a bit going on, and we'll talk about that. And I think Adam Ramanauskas wants to be a part of that conversation. He's a Bombers Premiership player, knows about the postseason as well. And these days... he manages Premiership players and future Premiership players and does a great job as well. Rama, good morning to you.
Yes, very good morning. It was a very exciting weekend from a sporting sense. Obviously, the finals, the four finals were all magnificent. We spoke about the Port Adelaide and Geelong game on Friday, but it just simply got better from there. Over the weekend, there were just three other great games of football that we were privileged to see. And I think that, you know, that's an element of the shorter quarters and how they play out in these finals. Why you get closer games? I know a lot of us don't like them. I don't like them, but when the best come up against the best, this is probably what happens.
Yes, and we've said that through the journey that when the good teams play, the footy's okay. It's when you get a gap in the talent and the capabilities that you see some very, very average stuff. But on the weekend, we saw some magnificent performances, which we've got a fair bit to talk about after seven with Jim on the back of that. But if you're going to start a final series, just before we get there, if you're going to start a final series, that's how you start it, I reckon, with the games we got in the weekend.
Now, Rama, did I just hear you say that it had to do with the shorter quarters? Surely you're not saying that.
No, I think it did. I actually think it did.
Turn his microphone off.
Well, it's tough enough to deny.
I don't like it because the Bulldogs probably win with some extra time on that clock, and I would have loved the extra 28 minutes of playing time in those games that we miss out on because of the shortened quarters. But I think when the best come up against the best, I don't think the fatigue levels are as high as they normally are, Whitey, with the longer quarters. So,
well, history, you know,
teams
would say,
can go at it.
And the numbers would say that you are correct, Whitey, Rama, that the aggregate totals of the loss of the wins of 35 points, 16, 15, 3 and 1, is the lowest first week finals aggregate victory margins in the four games in the history of the final eight, and the lowest since 1990 when there are only two games played. So history would say, and the data would say, that Rama might be onto something there, Whitey, that the smaller margins, now there's a lot of factors, we understand, but the smaller margins have a correlation with reduced game time.
Whitey won't cop that, I don't think,
this morning.
No, I will not. No,
well,
I will
have
not.
To. That's the data. Can't argue with data, mate. Take that for data.
Yeah, but that might not have anything to do, well, not might, that doesn't well, necessarily have anything to do with the fact that...
might.
There were shorter quarters,
might.
Which is close matches.
Might.
So of the games that were played, if you were looking at it from a betting perspective, there was only one of the four favourites that won, but three of the higher seeds won.
So how many did you get?
So it just shows that... No, I got none. I got absolutely none. I got zero out of
Rama,
four.
What'd you get?
One. One, I got St Kilda.
Right. Well, that's why they call me Mr. October, I suppose. Three out of four. And that's fine. That's fine. I didn't want to bring it up. I didn't want to bring it up, but I'm glad that you did. I was a bit stiff. The other one was a one-point margin the other way, so I would have swept it all. But anyway, not important right now. You're right. The seeds were the ones outside of the Magpies who put on an outstanding coaching display and assessment of that plan in the moments there at Optus Stadium on Saturday night. They were the only ones to upset the seeding rankings going into or coming out of week one.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see. To Rammer's point, I think it does add more fuel to the idea of potentially going to 18-minute quarters next year and finding the happy balance between 16 and 20. But I don't think, as I said, I don't think it had anything to necessarily do with the shorter quarters. What we saw, particularly with the two top seeds, and I would throw in St Kilda as well, is the teams that played positive football throughout the course of the year were able to play positive football in a final, and Collingwood made a clear move to be more positive in the way that they move the football. We know that they're a good defensive team, but when they move the ball quickly, they looked a hell of a lot more dangerous. West Coast couldn't set up behind the ball, and that's what gave them a chance of winning. So really, the four teams that played the most positive football were the four teams that won. And the Bulldogs, for whatever reason, decided to only play well when it was too late. And St Kilda has to be given a lot of credit for the way that they set up that victory and the way that they played for three quarters.
Sounds a bit much like analysis to me, which we'll do after seven.
With
Jim. I know once we start to roll, it sort of just flows out. We've just got to hold it up. Tuck in behind, wait till we get to the clock tower, then we go, Wishka, Whitey. That's what we do. Wishka.
Okay, sorry.
I'm telling you, Whitey, who wanted one less minute of game time on the weekend was Paddy Ryder.
Oh, that's a bit sad. That's a bit sad.
Paddy's very
done the hamstring. He's out, Ski, and it might have a significant effect
on
Jack Carlisle situation at St Kilda, who's coming home for the birth of his child, I believe. Has that been confirmed, just by the way?
Yeah,
it's been confirmed, yeah.
No, it has been. He told his teammates late last week what he was doing, but I believe that his partner's somewhere around the New South Wales and Victorian border. So
New South Wales,
there may be some sort of chance if St Kilda win this weekend that he may be able to play a prelim final.
Righto.
He's been an amazing story, Jack Carlisle, because he lost his place in the team. He hasn't got a contract for next year, but the thought is he would get one, but he hasn't got one. And he has actually played very well over the last couple of weeks since he came back into the team. So, he always is an interesting story. But we'll see what happens there. But, yeah, for Paddy Ryder, it's a football tragedy in a lot of ways because he's never won a final, never been part of a winning final, and he's played at three clubs and he's played at finals in three clubs, and he finally gets that victory, and he was instrumental in that victory, but does a tendon in the hamstring in the last minute, which means his season is over when finally he's part of a team that wins. So, he's been in the system for nearly 15 years, and that happens. It's extraordinarily bad luck.
Yep, it is. We'll discuss that after 7 o'clock. What's caught your eye across the globe, Whitey? Which unusual happening is top of your mind at the moment?
Can't you tell?
Look, wow. Yeah, that's right.
Goodness, well, it's some Joey Pitaro with his...
Yeah, no, there's a bit of Joey.
It's real
fan. There's a bit of Joey.
Little fanboys.
Joey's got his Magpies top on today. He's up and about. He's got he must have cut his own hair. It looks like it anyway. And Whitey's got the Tottenham top on. Goodness me.
Well,
cheer squad members.
It started, this is in the Premier League overnight, some remarkable results, and there's a remarkable score currently going on at the moment. It started off with Leicester City, who were the champions a few years ago, or a couple of years ago, had been undefeated through the first three matches, won their first three matches. At home, they went down 3-0 to West Ham United. That was a big shock to start things off. Arsenal wasn't so much a surprise. They won 2-1 over Sheffield United. But then at Old Trafford, Tottenham has defeated Manchester United 6-1. 6-1. They led 4-1 at half-time, having given up the first goal. And then at half-time, currently between Aston Villa and Liverpool, this is half-time, it is Aston Villa 4, Liverpool 1.
They're in decline, Liverpool. I've been concerned about it for a while now. They're in decline. They're a bit like Geelong of all those years ago. When Kevin Bartlett announced to the world that they were in decline, they kept making prelims. I reckon they're just about done, Liverpool. Got ahead of themselves. And Villa have come knocking and said, not on my watch. Ollie Watkins, the first player since Dimitar Berbatov in 2010 to score three against Liverpool across the EPL in the last 10 years. So he's having some sort of half with three in the first half, three of those four. But you're right, 6-1 Tottenham. Jose said he feels for Ollie Gunnar Solskjaer. He feels for him. And Ollie says, I'm having a bit of a flat patch. I'll do what I can to get out of this. There's some great comments in the post-match between those two.
I think Man United are tanking for draft picks already. Even though there's no draft.
There's been a... haven't had a good time the last couple of years, have they, United? I mean, it's been a really challenging period for that football club. Been such a dominant force for so long under Sir Alex. And the handover since has not gone well at all. Not gone well at all.
No. And the hard part half about this one for Manchester United is that Ollie is one of Manchester United's favourites. He's a Manchester United man. There was a feeling that he was under pressure from halfway through last season. So, look, they've only played three games, Manchester United, but they're currently sitting 16th position on the table. Now, admittedly, Manchester City... City sits in 14th position. So, as I said, it has been a crazy start to the year. And we were talking about this last week, half, in the Premier League, that because there was such a short off-season, that the feeling was that one of the reasons why there's been so many goals scored is that the players aren't as fit as they would otherwise be, which means that they're not being able to defend as well. They can't get their formation right behind the ball. Yeah, and also the fact that the offense is a lot more up tempo and giving themselves more chance of scoring. So it just shows in any sport you go through cycles, and at the moment it's a good cycle that the Premier League seems to be in because there's been a lot of goals scored right throughout the course of the first month of the season.
Yeah, well, we buried the lead too, Joe. Any danger of updating that screen for me? That'd be awesome if you could. I've got the spring ticket going gangbusters here. We buried the lead there. It's evident, top of the table, undefeated after four matches, and they've scored. What have they scored? 12 goals, I think, in their four matches, and only copped up five. So they've got a goal difference of seven after the first four games. And who would have thought Everton would be the sexiest club in English football after a month of the action?
No, well, Leicester
has scored 12 goals, Tottenham has scored 12 goals, Chelsea 10 goals. So, yeah, as Whitey said, just goals galore at the moment in the Premier League.
Quite a remarkable weekend in action in the English Premier League. The City Leeds United 1-1 draw turns out to be a decent result for City the way things are going this weekend.
Yeah.
Unusual times. Now, we saw the Aussie women in action across the weekend. Whitey, the first one day against between them and New Zealand. A bit of a clinic by the Aussies. And our girl, Georgia Wareham, is continuing to impress. Match in, match out. She and Soph Molyneux are putting the brakes on the Kiwis every time they get the ball in their hands, be it T20 cricket or one-day cricket. And she was player of the match the other day, Georgia Wareham, 2 for 23 off her 10. Soph Molyneux 2 for 28 off her 10. They're able to just put the brakes on the New Zealanders, and they've got no chance. 3 for 181 they put up. Sorry, 3 all out for 180. And the Aussies in reply did it on their ear. 3 for 181 with Meg Lanning leading the charge. 62 not out. And Rachel Haynes, who we spoke to 2 weeks ago, leading into the T20 series maybe.
Yep.
44, Lisa Hinley 26. So the top of the order for the Aussies. Oh, just way too strong for this New Zealand outfit. Just way too strong, the world champs.
Yeah, well, Rama was talking about shorter quarters potentially helping the footy stay close. That's the case with Australia when it comes to cricket, that the longer the game, the bigger the gap between themselves and everyone else in the world. And as you said, it's a good word, half. They were clinical over the weekend against New Zealand, and the score that they got was never going to be enough for Australia. They got there comfortably. And Meg Lanning, ever since she did her shoulder, she struggled to get back to her best, but it just seems that the break between the T20 World Cup final and now, she's clearly back to her best because she's batting particularly well at the moment. So that is good for business.
Game 2 is today. I think 11 a.m. Check your local guides for more on that. But I think the game two is today in that series between Australia and New Zealand. 11:10 it is. 11:10 a.m. Check your local guides.
So I touched on Lucas Herbert. For those that love their golf, he finished at 9 under par with a final round 65. It looked going to the 17th that he needed to make at least one more birdie on his final two holes to get in the clubhouse at 11 under. Unfortunately, he bogeyed 17 when he couldn't quite get up and down. He nearly holed his chip and then missed the one back for par and then missed a putt on the last, just falling short to get in the clubhouse at 10 under. So he was at 9 under, nearly 9 holes ahead of anybody else. But what made it a remarkable comeback half was that on the Saturday night, that he was involved in some horrendous conditions. It was really wet, but incredibly windy, as you'd often get in the Lynx Golf up in Scotland. They were playing close to Edinburgh. He had 79 on the Saturday when he was leading going into the third round and then came back in much better conditions on Sunday and shot 65. So it was a 14-shot differential. He wasn't the only one that struggled in that third round, but it looked like he would put himself out of contention to be 6 behind going into the final round. So it shows his character that he was able to get himself back. And what that means now is with that tie for fourth, he's at 7th in the race to Dubai. That was a Rolex Series event. So there's a hell... Yeah, just let that go, please. He's now 7th for the race to Dubai. So that means he's pocketed this season, considering that there hasn't been a lot of events, €264,000. And all the sort of the rich events, including Wentworth, is this week. So he's really going extremely well at the moment. Now, Wade Ormsby was in the final group. Unfortunately for Wade, he didn't have a great final round. He shot 73 to finish in a tie for 19th. The event was won by an Englishman called Aaron Rye. He's the man that wears the two gloves. Yeah, very solid player. Very solid player. Doesn't make a lot of mistakes.
Second last week as well.
Yep. He shot, amazingly, 64 in the final round. So one better than Lucas. And he got into the clubhouse at 11 under. Tommy Fleetwood also got to 11 under, but Aaron Rye won the playoff. So it was a 1-2-3 for England. Rye, Fleetwood and Rock were the top three.
Interested to talk to Lucas at some stage when we can.
Hopefully we can catch up with him this week.
To find out about the mindset. I mean, of being in the lead, coming into through the last round, as opposed to being 6 back, coming into the last round. It's sort of rip it or bust, I suppose, in the last round. And when he's on, he's quite prolific with his scoring capabilities. But can that be translated to being in the lead in round three as opposed to having to trail and fight and scrap and give yourself a chance? And he just ran out of holes in the end because he was too far back. But 41, he went out in 41 on Saturday and he went out in 31 on Sunday. So 10 shots just in the front nine.
Yeah.
From Saturday to Sunday.
Well, he had 3 putts for eagle in his first 10 holes last night. So, you know, he hit such a long ball and can be such an attacking player. But he's like a colt. He's just so talented, but he is still a little bit sort of inconsistent. He's just got so much talent, though, and it's so exciting when he's flying, which he certainly was last night.
Yes, that is correct. It was interesting golf across the weekend, watching those conditions change so dramatically from Saturday to Sunday. Off the SMS, fatigue equals goals. Rama, just on what you were talking about with the EPL and Whitey, with the lack of training and preparation, there's a lot of goals in the English Premier League. It's been one of the conversations in Australian rules for a long time, hasn't it? Fatigue equals goals. Says the SMSer, which is an interesting point.
Now, exactly. Did you keep up to date with the NFL over the weekend and what was going on there?
Now, talk me through it.
Well, they had a lot of positive COVID tests. Obviously, the Tennessee Titans game's been cancelled. They've had 18 players and staff test positive. Cam Newton of the New England Patriots tested positive. So their game was initially going to be postponed for a few days, but now I believe it's going ahead. They had a New Orleans Saints players test positive, but then was retested a la Connor McKenna, and that came back negative in the end. So that game, their game's going ahead as we speak. So it's been interesting to watch how I think the American sports have handled any positive COVID tests. Now, the NBA within their bubble have had 0. The baseball, when they started back, they had, I think the Miami Marlins were a team that had plenty of cases go through. They just postponed games simply. And now with the NFL having the positive tests within their game, how they've handled the situation effectively. You know, the NFL really just got on with it. They've moved games. They've said, well, whoever the players had close contact with, they get tested. Obviously, if they're positive, they can't play. But we need to continue to move forward and play games. So, very interesting. And then, obviously, some interesting results going ahead this morning. The Browns are absolutely giving it to the Cowboys, 41-14 at the moment. Like, it's a crazy sort of season, the NFL, how it's playing out at the moment.
Pretty high scoring.
Yeah.
The NFL, I've been watching the last couple of weeks. Lots of big scores, total points, if you're into that sort of thing. It's like 60 points a game almost between most teams.
It's huge numbers, Whitey.
Yeah, it's interesting also just that whole thing about not playing in front of crowds and the impact that that's having on particular sports. Now, there are some games where there are some people watching. But it's a little bit like before I was talking about Tottenham defeating Manchester United. Now, that was 6-1. I mean, that score in itself is quite remarkable, but it was at Old Trafford where they don't have, or Manchester United don't have that massive crowd. And I just wonder whether that has anything to do with the NFL as well, because we are seeing, I think, more upsets than we have in other years. And, you know, it has to have some sort of impact to things. You know, we know this. Some players perform better with crowds. Some don't, and I would argue even that the finals in the AFL that were played over the weekend, that with full crowds in some cases or close to full crowds, we actually saw some better football. And I wonder whether that had anything to do with sort of feeding off the energy, because I reckon that has to have something to do with it.
So, trivia question. It's Ramesh trivia today.
Hang on a second. Is this just a sneaky attempt to get a quiz back into the show? Is this what you're doing?
No,
YouTube
not at all.
In cahoots?
No. The NFL is the second highest attended sport average in the world. What's the highest attended sport in the world?
Oh,
average.
I thought it was the NFL. No, I can't tell you. No, wouldn't even know where to start.
The Bundesliga.
Is that right?
Mm.
What's the average attendance of the Bundesliga?
Oh, I think it's a touch over 60.
Is that right?
Yeah, touch over 60.
Are you making that
AFL,
up?
AFL, sort of... No. The AFL are in the top five. I was looking at this the other day.
Yeah, I thought we used to be fourth, the AFL, back in the old days. That's a good...
No, I don't make up my quiz like you, Waddy. I've actually go with facts.
You can say what you like about the quiz. The quiz is time honoured. It's respected. Nothing you're going to say is going to hurt me. The fact that there is no quiz is a disgrace in itself.
Well, we want to go there.
Anyway.
Well, why would you want to go there? Now, where did you get that data from? Is that updated data? That?
Yeah, that's updated data. Yeah, that's from actual work. That's from my work, not from just the World Wide Web.
Are you taking this year into account, are you? Is that where you're dragging the NFL down? Because the NFL, according to my resources, the NFL averaged 67,000. Bundesliga was 44. Anyway,
no,
I'll take your word for it.
Okay.
I'll take your word for it. I will. I really will. But I don't believe
isn't it remarkable that Cam Newton tested positive to coronavirus and no one else did at New England?
Yeah, I know. Which is amazing because he's been in the huddle with them all week, training, weights, all this close contact sort of tracing. But it's just, I think it's just luck in the end, isn't it, Whitey? Like,
unbelievable.
Geez, like you look at the Tennessee Titans players, 18 staff and players have tested positive now.
I got tested on Friday.
Mm.
First time.
Did you?
Yeah.
Why?
For the girls. We're doing some stuff with the AFLW girls. From this week, so I had to go and get tested to get back into the biosphere, the biodome of Icon Park. All good.
Well, there's no chance that you had it. You haven't left your house for six months.
I was pretty sure that I'd be okay. But just the whole the drive-through process there at Marvel Stadium, remember?
Right.
Fantastic stuff.
Yeah. All right.
A little brush up your snores.
How's that going to work?
There's
no chance that the women can go into a bubble in the AFLW.
No, there's no bubble happening. But you got to get tested before you get in the door. Don't be bringing it with you.
Jeez.
Kate Winslet. Craig Gabriel, I think, is there with us, so getting ready to cover the French Open. But I'm sure he's mates with Kate, who I'm sure loves tennis as well. The All England Club would be somewhere where she'd almost be a member, I reckon. Craig, good morning.
Morning. My heart will go on, absolutely, with Katie. I call her Katie, or sometimes if really friendly, I call her Winnie.
Right. Winnie. Yeah, that makes sense when you break it down. That makes sense to me. Just where did your relationship start?
It was after Leo drowned. yeah, she needed some consoling.
And there's only one man you want to do that for you after
she was nominated
drowning.
But then also I had to console her because she was nominated for the Academy Award and didn't win for Titanic, but a couple of years later ended up winning for The Reader, which was a pretty dramatic film for her. I mean, there are a few full frontals on that one. I wasn't happy about that with Winnie.
Right, okay, yeah, all right. Well, Whitey's Googling as we speak. So how old do you think Kate is today? Have you been able to track that down?
Yeah, I sent her an advance email last night in the middle of watching the French Open to wish her for her 45th birthday.
Spot on.
Correct.
Spot on. He's very good, this man.
Nah, there's Google going on. No way.
No, he doesn't Google, mate.
Nah.
He knows people. It's Rolodex stuff. It's the reminder on the phone that comes up.
Seriously?
Yeah, he's sort of.
You've gone there, Rama. I'm disappointed.
He pads, Craig pads, and just talks, and
disappointed.
He's typing away. Whitey, what do you think? It's too obvious now.
Let me tell you, no, it's not true, because if I was doing that, Dominic Thiem is in a press conference at the moment, and if I did go out of that, I'd lose the recording of the press conference.
That's true. That is true. See, I was disappointed you went there, Rama. Real sour grape stuff.
Exactly right. People don't understand quite the depth of Craig's contact list. Craig knows everybody. He's the man of the world. He travels, and he just, that's just what happens. Hey, Craig, there was some we're talking off the top of the show about some extraordinary results across the weekend, particularly overnight in the world of sport. Well, the same goes to tennis, because we've got some massive shocks, and not just big names going out, but the nature of how they've gone out.
Look, the women's draw is an absolute damn mess. I mean, let's be honest about it. There's four seeds left, and there are half of them I can't even pronounce their names, or I've never even heard of them. Who the heck is Martina Trevisan, the Italian qualifier? I mean, what I've been suggesting is that she went and visited the fountain and threw a few coins in there to give her good luck. But, here she is in the fourth round of the French Open after beating the fifth seed Kiki Bertens. But Iga Swiatek, what a performance from her. I don't know her, but I've been watching her over the last couple of years after she was the best junior in the world. And she's been coming on pretty well after some injuries. And, stunning effort to beat Simona Halep today, 6-1, 6-2.
To
the fourth round. And she's going to play Trevisan for a place in the quarterfinals of the French Open. But who the heck is Nadia Podoroska? From Argentina. Seriously, she came through qualifying.
Well, what the hell's happening, Craig? Why is this happening? Because it's not as if they're going to epic tiebreaks in the third either, or advantages in the third. I mean, the Halep game was 6-1, 6-2. Like, absolutely wiped her.
Yeah, look, I so much of it, as Simo was saying today, she said it was so cold and out there, and it was 11 degrees when they started today. In Paris, and she says she can't get her legs going when it gets cold. She says she finds it hard to be running around in those sort of cold conditions. Looking at that, the bottom part of the women's draw, it's Paula Badosa of Spain playing Laura Siegemund for a place in the quarterfinals.
That's an unusual time over there in Paris. So the Weather and the heavy balls. It's playing a bigger part than perhaps we all thought.
It's different conditions, completely different conditions, different time of the year. It is much heavier. It is cold over there. They've all been saying that the weather has been cold. It's been damp as well. So it's affecting a lot of the players. And, this is what we're seeing, the results of that.
You mentioned before that Dominic Thiem was in a press conference. Was that for a positive reason or a negative reason?
Positive. I mean, he's still going. Now he's speaking with the Drummen, and he's talking to the Drummen and the Austrian media. And it was a positive result, but it shouldn't have gone to the extent that it did. He was up 2-0, and then only won 6-3 in the fifth set. But he's playing this young kid, Hugo Gaston, who beat Stan Wawrinka 6-love in the fifth the other day. And he's a tremendous young talent. He's not long out of juniors. He played juniors with Sebastian Gorda. So we're seeing some exciting young talent coming through. But, wow, what a lefty he is. I mean, he plays a fantastic match, game, rather. And Domi really sort of saw that, but got through when, picked up the points that he had to, and it was a fantastic five-setter.
Good morning, Jim.
Morning, gentlemen. How good is footy? Where are all those people that said the game's, no good, we need to change it, let's have 12 aside, let's play with tennis balls, let's create all sorts of new rules, jumbo goal squares. All the doomsdays of the game. Half, where are they now?
Well, they're having a spell for the moment because they're enjoying all of
you.
Footy, Jim.
All of you. Where are you? All of you.
Let's just start straight then.
Got him.
No, because I think it's a good point that we sort of touched on this from the start this morning about the good teams do play positive football. The good teams do try and actually score. So do the bad teams watching the finals go, maybe we should score a bit more? Or does it actually see them doubling down in trying to stop the good teams from scoring? Because it did seem that every team that won had an actual real intent to try and score as opposed to stop the other team from scoring.
Yeah, there's a few bits there, Whitey, to unpack. I think coaches know how good their team and list is, and as you said, double down. When they come up against good opposition, they slow the game down, they take the air out of it, they play what we call boring football, don't we? Like the way they play. There's also clear and distinct styles and being brave with your style and backing it in. We've spoken about the Saints and the Dogs. Even the other top four sides, Richmond play a distinct style. We know how Brisbane play. Talent as well comes into that. But the point I've been making and banging on forever and a day is the finals are good teams playing each other. So you see good footy. So if you go on the Wayback Machine, when we used to get the game of the round or Friday night footy and Saturday night, we'd see the games of the round. So we'd see footy at its absolute best. We wouldn't be watching every single game and have access to every single game. And that's always been my point. There's been good games and bad games of footy. You should judge the quality, the standard and how the game's being played on finals football because that's its pinnacle.
Yeah. That's seemingly what we've seen, Jim, in the last little while. Your point is interesting, Whitey, about how to play good teams. What do you do against good teams? Do you try and limit them, restrict the good teams? Because more often than not, as a rule, good teams score. That's just the way things happen. Do you restrict them or do you take them on and try and find a way to beat them through an attacking mindset? Clearly, the easiest thing to do is to try and defend and bring it back to a more arm wrestle, more of an arm wrestle as opposed to a free-flowing affair. And it's seemingly a protective mechanism to not make yourself look too bad as opposed to trying to make yourself look good.
Yes, that's true. But I think Collingwood, we went into that game watching it on Saturday night thinking, how are Collingwood going to be able to stop the Eagles from scoring with Kennedy and Darling and Ryan and these guys down the forward line? And Collingwood thought, you know what? We're going to go and try and score ourselves. And they scored their biggest score since round three because they were prepared to take the game on a little bit and be a bit more expansive in offence, move it quickly and give their forwards a chance, particularly early in that match. And I just flip it back the other way and I look at Geelong and think, geez, Geelong, you know, you've got that weaponry. And I reckon they were the most conservative of all the teams across the course of the weekend, and they're the team that didn't win.
I think something that was very evident on the weekend is that particularly the Geelong-Port Adelaide game, the St Kilda Bulldogs game and the West Coast Collingwood game, is that the winning team went after something particular. So Port Adelaide went after Tom Stewart in that game. They wanted to take him out with Brad Ebert. St Kilda, they went after Caleb Daniel. They dragged him back to the goal square, which never happens to Caleb Daniel. Geary was a really effective player. He kicked a couple himself, handed off another goal. Then in the West Coast Collingwood game, Greenwood went after Tim Kelly. Tim Kelly had 12 possessions. So you still got to identify what the opposition, how's the opposition going to beat you? You still got to identify that in the final. You go after that. And it doesn't need to be trickery, Whitey, in finals or Jimmy. All it needs is something that you go, okay, if we can shut this down, it's going to give us a much better chance to win. And I thought those three teams did that really well on the weekend.
Yeah, I couldn't agree any more with that, Rama. Spot on. Also to the fact that going back to your first point, Whitey, about why do, you know, sort of bad teams or lesser teams, why don't they attack? And I think we've spoken about this a lot. I think, and it's even more emphasised with the short quarters this year, but I think a lot of coaches, and we use the T20 term a lot, they try and get the game deep and then have a chance of winning it.
Yeah.
So, like, if you just shut the game out, and it's been borrowed a bit from NFL too. We're all NFL followers.
Absolutely.
And, Bill Belichick of the New England Patriots, if he knew he didn't have the talent, what he'd do is he'd close the game down and then you play almost a four-minute game. The last 4 minutes, that's it,
yep.
Right, game on. And a bit with AFL, like, we're seeing a lot of teams now, they know they can defend as a whole team and you drag the game down and with 10 minutes to go, let's open it up and have a crack at winning it. If we don't, you don't look too bad losing by two goals, do you?
No, I agree with you, and I don't think... I think it's unavoidable, because I understand why teams do it. I truly do. But I also think we saw on the weekend, we saw some high-quality football played, and I think there is a big gap between the good teams in the competition and the teams that were watching over the course of the weekend. There does seem to be a significant gap.
Can I ask you, gentlemen, then, we always talk about there's a difference between playing the game not to lose and playing the game to win. Do we feel like the mindset shifts in finals? Like, you're actually going out going, we're playing to win, whereas, as we spoke about, a lot of games during the year are set up so not to lose or lose poorly. Does that make sense, what I'm asking you guys? So there's a definite mindset shift.
But that's an optics thing for those clubs, Jim, as well. Like,
ooh,
you know, you talk about not losing... You're not losing poorly. So that's just, okay, we can't go out and lose by 8, 10, 12 goals because it's just, that's the knock-on effect. So particularly early in the year, clubs go, well, we just can't have that because simply members won't sign up. They won't sign up and we just won't get the numbers and we won't have money coming in flowing into the bank. Then a coach towards the end of the season when he's fighting for his career, he'll go, if I have two or three of those losses, I may not have a job next year moving into the future. So I think definitely in the home and away season, there's that let's not lose by too much so we'll make the game boring. I think, yeah, finals, you're right. It's a little bit different. But if you have a big loss in finals, you come in for much more criticism. You're analysed a hell of a lot more than in the regular season.
Yeah, well, and there's no tomorrow for most teams in the finals. So you do play to win because you might as well go down swinging. Whereas in the home and away fixtures or a season, you've got options, you've got time, you can build yourself or, you know, just keep it steady if you want, or you can go as hard as you like. It depends on your mode and where you sit in the scheme of things, which is different to a finals campaign.
Yeah, this might be hard for you to answer, Harf, because we know the way you see footy and you're one who likes to see the talent shine, but you are the only proud bucket hat wearing coach amongst the group of us.
Coach of the year, don't talk about it.
reigning coach of the year. Should be four-time reigning coach of the year. But do you sit there in coaches' meetings? So if you came against a stacked side in your time as a coach, in whatever you've coached in so many different competitions, have you gone in your match committee and said, yeah, talent, paper-wise, we don't have it, so do we set the game up to make it slower and dour?
No, I try and find a way around it. That's just a philosophical thing for me. That's one thing that I've always liked to do, is because it's the way I wanted to play, Jim. I wanted to play with a bit of flair and expression and find a way to hit the scoreboard and be attacking. You've got to be able to have modes and phases of play, but I can honestly tell you I've never gone into a game planning to try and make it a slugfest, because I don't think we can win. Because funnily enough, I always think we can. Doesn't matter where we are on the ladder or who we're playing, I always think we can. Maybe I'm stupid. Every chance I'm stupid, but I always think we can.
All right, I won't go to Jimmy here first. I'll go to Rammer and you half on the Geelong-Port Adelaide situation. I know that was the Thursday night game, but the reality is Geelong now play a confident Collingwood this week. Do you think Geelong are positive enough? Is the intent positive enough when they go into games? Do you think on Thursday night they were just beaten by a better team?
I'm not as down on Geelong as everybody else. They didn't play well on Thursday night, but realistically they still could have won the game.
Like, at 17 shots Hawkins, to 13.
Yeah, that's right. Hawkins kicked 0-5. So, and I know people will go, well, geez, the Trent McKenzie matchup worked. Well, did it really work? He had 6 shots a goal. He kicked 5 behinds plus 1 out in the full. So that he was a pretty good player, just didn't kick straight. What I did think is with Geelong on the weekend, once Port Adelaide took away their strengths, Geelong couldn't flick the switch back. And this is the problem in finals. Once a team gets momentum in a final, it's very, very hard to shift that momentum back. So what Port Adelaide actually did to Geelong is they made the field wide, they switched the ball a lot, made their defenders move, and they didn't like it. So who could honestly say before the game, if Charlie Dixon doesn't take a mark in a Port Adelaide final, they're still going to win the game? But that's not possible, really, when you think about it. Now, they had a lot of other players with a contribution. Stevie Motlop, obviously, with 3 goals. But Geelong will look at that game and go, look, we didn't play our best, but we're still pretty close. We just need to tweak these things slightly.
I'm with you, Ram. I'm a long way from being down on the Cats. They were beaten by a much more efficient team on the night, who beat them at clearance, had clearance dominance over them, and that created field position, and they protected that territory better than they've done for a long time, and Geelong had to find a way through, and they did often. I mean, 5 goals 12 to 9 goals 4 was the final scoreline. Yep. They got looks. They Port Adelaide defended really well their defensive 50, and they forced Geelong wide, and that's why they ended up with 5 goals 12. So they had a plan in place. If they were going to get it, they were going to get it into bad spots and make it difficult for them. With a hostile crowd, the pressure of finals, and in the Cats' recent history, I don't know if that plays a part in the psychology of the players, but it certainly, I reckon, might have had an effect on the Port Adelaide, and they would have used that coming into this game with Ken Hinckley at the top there. They were brilliant, the power, but the Cats were a long way from Paul. But having said that, Whitey, they are under enormous pressure this week. If they go out to straight sets this year again, they are under enormous pressure.
In what regard?
Yeah, who's under pressure?
The fact that are absolutely under pressure. They've won 4 of their last 16 finals,
and 3 of those were in one campaign back in 2011.
Yeah, who's under pressure? That's
Geelong.
The question we're asking.
Geelong's under enormous pressure this week.
What are you saying then? If they don't win this final, they've got to rebuild.
Well, they're going to do something. They've got the oldest list in footy.
You can't keep doing the same thing.
But they have. They do keep doing the same thing.
That's right.
They keep getting back to top 4 and things like that. I think that's a bit of what Chris Scott, I'm not saying what he was trying to say, but he was trying to get across, go, well, part of the point I felt like he was trying to make is, yeah, I've got a bad record, but because I keep making it. And there seems to be that acceptance where we keep making top 4 and we keep putting ourselves in that position. So I'm a bit with Rammer. I go, Yeah, the pressure will be the record, but what's that going to equal?
Well, you want them to go down to 12.
It's your definition of success, isn't it? What's success for Geelong? Their definition of success will be different to the Western Bulldogs, or let's say for this year, or St Kilda for this year.
There is no disagreement, Huff, but I'm a bit with Rammer. We'll talk about it. We'll say there's pressure. But what will be the end result?
Okay.
They're not sacking the coach.
No.
Apart from maybe someone retiring or usual trade free agency period, what will happen?
Well, they're going to have to find a way to get past that phase if it happens, Jim,
I'm not disagreeing, and I don't think, Rami, you're disagreeing either, but this whole build-up of reflecting on the Cats' record and then, like, there'll be drastic changes is just not going to happen.
I don't think there's a suggestion that there's going to be dramatic changes, but Geelong have won 4 of 16 finals.
Yeah, it's bad.
Of their last,
that's really bad.
That's not good. Now, so I'll flip it back and say, will players be concerned, worried? Would it be in the back of their mind about how they've performed in finals in recent years for that to be a record? Or do you think they can just block that out?
Okay, so where would you prefer to be, Whitey? Winning 4 of 16 finals and qualifying for finals, or being in St Kilda's position, only playing in one final series since 2011?
I think it's two separate arguments.
You're saying they're going to be under pressure. So under pressure, you're saying, well, things need to change, and Geelong potentially need to go. They need to look at their list and potentially rebuild.
I didn't say that at all.
In a different way.
I didn't say that. I did not say that at all.
We're at 2x7 here at the minute.
Yeah, that's right.
That's then the pressure. The pressure's there to win.
The pressure
that's
is
on every team.
The pressure is they have a brand of football that sees them finishing inside the top 4 in most years in qualifying matches, and then in finals, I would question whether their game style suits finals because their record is their record.
This is back to that philosophical question I asked. The mindset changes in finals, so the Cats are better than anyone else and not defeating themselves. And this is this game style of, you know, you play slow, you build it up from the back half, you're really set behind the ball. But you're coming up against really good teams who are willing to take that on, and this is where they come a little bit unstuck. I think in future, would you look for some more speed out of your back half, a player who really runs and carries or take the game on? Because you look at their back six mix-up, there's great defenders and they're intercept defenders, but they're all slow with the ball. Tell me who plays with any speed with the ball in their back half. Now, Stewart is probably one, but they get him right back on the last line. Tell me another one apart from young Clark who hasn't established himself yet.
Tui's the other one, Jim, but they're not playing him in that. They're playing more up on a wing or even a little bit of half forward at the moment, but where he actually takes the ball and tries to run or at least kick over a line.
See, I think he used to, but I reckon in the last 18 months, 2 years, because of where he is in his career, he's a kick first, go back, use his kicking power, which is a good kick, but I don't think he's the run and carry player that he used to be. Mm. Yeah, have a look at sides. They've all got that point of difference across the back line. You look at Port Adelaide, they've got it with Byrne Jones and a host of others.
Yeah.
Brisbane do it. Yeah, they've all got that Hooley for Richmond. Yeah, they've all got that sort of one who can break a line with their feet first.
All right, so Whitey then. Okay,
David Wojcicki.
So you're Chris Scott this week, okay?
Yep.
You're saying they're under pressure. What would you change this week in Geelong's team?
I'm saying they're under pressure. They're absolutely under pressure.
Are you saying they're not?
I'm saying you would change. I'm asking you what you would change.
Okay, I'm changing. I can answer that very quickly. I would firstly have Patrick Dangerfield playing in the midfield and not playing in the forward line. In my view with Geelong, it's a mindset thing. They need to be braver. They need to take the game on a little bit more because they've got the weaponry to do that, and they play passive football, and they let the opposition dictate the way the game is played too much, in my view. And if I'm Nathan Buckley, in massive writing on the whiteboard, I am writing 4 wins out of 16 games in finals. Collingwood, to the players of Collingwood, take the game on, be brave, and hit the scoreboard and see what happens.
Yeah, but that, you're not answering the question. I'm asking you what you would actually change structurally within Geelong's team. Patrick Dangerfield to the middle of the ground, that's one move.
Yeah, but I don't think, in a lot of ways with Geelong, I don't think it's necessarily changing a lot of things other than changing the intent for the way that they play. So a lot of it, we've seen it from Geelong. They can play some breathtaking football when the intent is to be positive and not to be passive and not to move the ball slowly and almost invite the pressure. Give themselves a chance. That's all I'm saying. Now, I'm the one here that hasn't played the game, but I watch Geelong and there's no team, and I have no emotional investment in Geelong, but there is no one that frustrates me more than watching Geelong play. Because they've, and Geelong supporters get frustrated with the way they play. Because they see all these brilliant players, they set themselves up with a lot of experience, they're one of the oldest teams in the competition, they're in it for winning now. And then when they get to the finals, I just don't think that they play as positively as they could. That's all I'm saying.
What I love about this finals footage brought out the passion in the whole panel. It's magnificent stuff. And that was the Thursday game. That was a long time ago.
It's actually about bringing that conversation forward. And that's what makes the final with Collingwood so intriguing for me, is that in a lot of ways, the Magpies feel like they've got nothing to lose. And so they can really take the game on now. Now, of course, they've got something to lose. It's a final. But I reckon if we look at it from a mental game looking forward to this weekend, jeez, I tell you what, Collingwood would like to fancy themselves.
Yeah. I know which camp I'd rather be in, Jim.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you're a good camper, Huff. The last time the Cats played them, guess what they kicked? And they probably played the slowest they ever played. 5 goals... Oh, no, was it 5
yeah,
goals, 5?
35 points, something, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So that's right.
Speed. They need speed. And, to answer your question, Rammer, it'd be first, you'd be backing your gun. Surely Rowan, Myers, Ablett couldn't be all that cold or shut out the game all at once like they were. Fantastic for Port. So it's a tick to Port. But I'm just saying from a Cat's point of view, surely we can't have these three down. Now, all Australians, well, let's just play them in their key positions in Menegola and Guthrie. Let's not try and be too clever with our mixes. Like, game in the balance, no disrespect, but you probably don't want Delhouse, Atkins, Duncan as your centre bounce squad, which you've never ran with. It's not
that
disrespectful to those three. It's not disrespectful to those three. You've just never ran with it. So why now? Yeah. Like, the game's in the line, in the balance. Maybe if you want a structural or position shift, if you're going to go with the same squad, I'd like to see something different from behind the ball, or you bring in someone who can do something different behind the ball. Because when you've got Kolodziejczyk, Henry, O'Connor, Blitzarves, Stewart,
Taylor,
that's all intercept the ball, go back behind the mark, find the safe one. Collingwood would want that.
See, Whitey, that's changes. They're changes.
Yeah.
The mighty Melbourne Vixens, they are through to the Suncorp Super Netball Grand Final in 2 weeks' time, and I reckon the skipper would be up and about. Liz Watson is her name, of course. She joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning. How are you going, guys?
We are going very well. Congratulations to you and the girls. You are into a grand final. How's that feel?
I know. It feels really exciting. I think it's almost a bit of a relief after everything that's happened this year. It's nice to finally say we're there and we're just going to give it a big crack.
Yeah, well, you can. I mean, it was a bit of a clinic, really. It was 31-20 at half time. You led by 11, and then extended that again in the third quarter. It was from start to finish, effectively, sort of a bit of a taper off in the last quarter, as sometimes happens when you've got a big lead. You were on song. What was the difference this week? How did that happen?
I think everyone was just so in tune, knew their role, just wanted to get the job done and get into that grand final. But to be honest, I never felt comfortable or relaxed. I think with this 2-point super shot, a 10-goal lead, even a 12-goal lead can be turned around so quickly. So it honestly wasn't until the last probably 3 or 4 minutes where I was like, I think we've got it now.
So are you telling me at 3-quarter time when you're 20 goals up, 20 points up, you're sitting there, you're nervous?
Well, we have been down by 14 before and we came back to draw a game due to the two-point shot. So it can happen. So maybe I'll just keep thinking of that.
So how big a challenge has it been from your perspective? We've had Sherelle part of our world for the whole season, all year. Wednesday she comes in and joins the team, which is great. She's talked about that some of the challenges that you've faced, but she's been sort of sitting watching back from afar. You've been living it through the season, and you had the period where you were playing games every 3 or 4 days, and the last little while you've expanded back to weekend games like normal. How challenging has it been to get through the season?
Yeah, look, it has had its challenges, but I think it's been so fun and exciting, and I think we've sort of come into this. Even when we started our quarantine, we came in with such a positive attitude, and we were just like, we just want to play netball. We thought our season was going to be cancelled. So I think having that positive attitude right from the start has really helped us. And look, we're living up in Brisbane. It's beautiful up here, apart from missing family and friends back home and all that kind of stuff. It has been really enjoyable, and we're very lucky. And I think the 2 week games was a bit of a challenge, but you know what? Simone trains us really hard, usually on a Wednesday night. So for me, it was like less training, more games, and I'm all for that. So it wasn't too different, really.
So, Liz, looking back on that performance now in the weekend, is that as well as the team has played this year? I mean, in a final, to have such a lead, a lot obviously has to go right. But how would you assess the performance?
Yeah, look, obviously we always pick out the things that we want to improve on, and it's never perfect. But I think for a performance in a final, it was pretty impressive, and everyone was really proud of that. We got all of our shooters on. They all rotated through, did their job, which has been something that we've worked on this season. But yeah, in changing after the game, Simone was obviously really happy, really positive, and obviously, there's a few little things to work on, and coming up against either the it could be the Lightning again or Fever. We'll find out next week. Both those teams are quite different in how we would play. So it's just once we know who we're playing, figuring out what we're going to do against them.
So what are you expecting then, Liz, with regard to the next week? You have a week off, and you're waiting in hub life. Is that ideal, or would you prefer to be continually playing games?
Ideally probably keep playing. There was talk of potentially doing the final midweek and then back on the weekend, but I guess that would have been a bit of a disadvantage to the team that gets the week break. So we'll train as normal this week. We'll try and do a practice match probably later in the week, hopefully against some other players, or, you know, it could be against ourselves, not too sure. But I think if we try and keep the weekend as normal as possible, in that we do have a match, we prepare like a match, we have the team meeting, we do the recovery. Because it is a long time sort of waiting around, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it can't be ideal. Yeah, it can't be ideal at all. Sorry, Harp, I was just going to ask Liz about when you first went up there, you had to stay in your hotel, you weren't allowed to leave pretty much. What's it like now? Can you get out into Brisbane at all, or are you still really strict in what you can and can't do?
So we can get around a little bit. We're still, our restrictions are probably a little bit tighter than the Queensland public, but we are having freedom to go out. We can go to cafes and restaurants as long as we sit outside. We've just been told to avoid large groups and that kind of stuff. So we do have quite a bit of freedom. When there were a few cases here, we kind of brought that back and just made sure that no one was sort of going out and doing anything that you kind of would back home. But, yeah, I think compared to Victoria, it sort of breaks my heart when I call home and there's not much to really talk about because my family and friends aren't really able to leave at all. So we do have a lot more freedom in that sense.
Yeah, don't ask us what we're doing and yes, how's your week's been, because nothing really changes, Liz, at the moment. It's just Groundhog Day every day. All we have is to be able to watch our favourite teams participate in sport somewhere else in the country. And you girls are certainly one of those. And you're through to the grand final, which we're very, very excited about. As you said, it'll be the Lightning and the Fever next week in the prelim. And the Fever's sort of given you a bit of trouble this year, haven't they? So it'll be interesting to see what happens in that clash.
Yeah, we had a good game against them the first time. And then, like I said, we were 14 goals down and came back for a draw. So they have that amazing tall goal shooter down there that they can score really, really quickly. So that's a danger for us. So she's pretty much a danger for the whole competition, really. So we'll see how we go.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.